China Carbon Forum recently met with Ms. Wu Changhua, the Greater China Director of the Climate Group. A China specialist for nearly 20 years and an environment and development policy analyst, she leads the organization's strategic development in the region and manages its Greater China operations. We get her view on China's recent INDC announcement, its role on the global stage of climate change negotiations, and the important work that her and her colleagues are doing. We hope you enjoy the interview. Last Tuesday, China submitted to the UN its INDC. Given the need to keep the global temperature rise to under 2 degrees and the mixed response that the 60 to 65% carbon intensity target has received, do you think that China is doing enough?
I think enough is a sort of tricky word. I think you had to use the word to put in a context. There are different scenarios done by different research institutes like International Energy Agency, MIT, and others, and they're all scenario-based analysis. And if you put the 60 to 65% to the commitment, actually, in the context of those analyses, you have to admit, yes, definitely, China definitely is on the sort of, they call it accelerated efforts, sort of track there. So in that sense, I see, yes, it's a very ambitious commitment. It's definitely, China is seriously considering, you know, taking on its own responsibility and to tackle the climate change issues. So yes, absolutely. I think it's, I wouldn't say adequate or enough. I think it's very ambitious.
You think it's very ambitious, even given the previous 2020 target for 40 to 45% carbon intensity? Mm-hmm. Which China looks set to be very much on course achieving, and then bearing in mind from 2020 to 2030.
No, that's a good point, actually. See, let's put things in perspective. Mm. We started the 11th five-year plan, we set a 20% energy intensity target between 2010 and 2005. Then came the financial crisis, but we managed to achieve 19.1%. And so we didn't really achieve 20, but we were not too far away from there. Then build upon that, actually getting into the 12th five-year plan. So we had two tracks of intensity target. One is energy, one is carbon. That's also set in line with this 2020 commitment China set in Copenhagen, which is a 40 to 45% over 2005 level. So as you said, actually, I think so far, again, there are different assessments about, you know, whether China is on the track, you know, how far China is going to be going. And again, actually referencing some mainstream research results. So it's been assessed by both the Chinese scholars and American scholars. So the American research basically saying China probably will be achieving somewhere around 53%, which is great. And the Chinese scholars, actually, the conclusion say, you know, China should be around like 50%. So they are pretty much aligned there already. So that's sort of leading up to 2020. So it's a full 40, 45%. If we achieve, say, 50%, that's 50% over the 2005 level. And I think we are on the track. Then build upon that, and then we set this further, right? We set 60 to 65% leading up to 2030. You need to keep in mind, basically say, when you have lots of low-hanging fruits, it's cheaper, it's easier, right? So that's why we could achieve more earlier stage. But when you get higher and higher, because you don't have much sort of low-hanging fruit around, and the cost actually would be much, much higher, and the technology level required to capture those potential also would be more complicated. So again, actually, I like to put things in perspective when you talk about those numbers. So put that in perspective, as I said. One, the current assessments led by IEA and MIT, basically saying China's current commitment actually of this 60 to 65% definitely is on the accelerated, the most aggressive actually scenarios. So China definitely is on that. And then, as I said, we've been, you know, started in the last 10 years already, we've been making efforts towards, you know, getting higher energy efficiency and carbon productivity there. So I think, yes, we're also on the track. So even though we achieve 50%, so by 2020, still, when you take, say, going up to 60 to 60%, that requires lots of efforts, requires more investment, requires more technology input, whatever, stuff like that. So if you put all things in that landscape, and you probably will get a very good understanding in terms of, you know, how serious the commitment is, and the determination and the commitment actually made by the government already, and definitely that's in line with the global effort in addressing climate change issues.
Taking a sort of step back, perhaps you could say, many sort of analysts see the Paris COP as an opportunity to take leadership on the climate change negotiations. Do you think the Chinese government will further engage proactively with other governments in the build-up between, well, up to Paris, between now and Paris COP? Do you think that the tide is changing now, that China is being seen more as an influencer with regards to climate change negotiations?
You probably, if you noticed, actually followed what the top leadership has been saying, and just a month ago, probably a few weeks ago, before China announced actually the INDCs, the Chinese Premier Li Keqiang convened a meeting and at the national level, and I think that more like this working climate change working group, whatever he chairs actually, and it's sort of interesting to notice the sort of a slightly sort of changing, you know, the language in terms of, you know, China and global, as you're asking the question. In it specifically, he said, China is going to be more proactively engaging the international community in order for the success of Paris process. So to answer your question, yes, China definitely not only say, I'm going to do whatever, stuff like that, I don't care what about, you know, the others. Rather, China already recognizes its own role in terms of, you know, bringing others together. So that's, I think, we are sort of in that process. You know, there are a couple of things. One, as I said, in order to engage others, and I think it, as a, you know, particularly the largest emitter today, China needs to basically say, you need to be very serious about it. You need to have serious commitment, making more efforts. I think China, as I said, the NDC is a good indication of, you know, that sort of a commitment and leadership. In the meantime, actually, rather than say, you know, using languages, if you don't do this, I don't, whatever, China said, I'm going to do this voluntarily. You know, this is my intended commitment. I don't care. It's not conditioned on whatever the US or others doing. So that's a part of the leadership there already. In the meantime, actually, with China more and more globalized with, you know, not at the regional level, but also globalized actually at the sort of global level. And China definitely is better positioned in terms of engaging others. So it's not say you have to do this or that, but rather to bring everyone, more and more players around the table, have a more constructive, meaningful conversation, say, you know, what we can do more in order to bring everyone, build up more consensus actually leading up to Paris. Leadership is a tricky word. How do you define it, right? And then you have also G20s, like big economies, they should. It's not necessarily say they do something that's definitely their leadership. I think, yes, their sort of a leadership in quotation marks is very important, and that's the fundamental thing, basic thing they have to do. It's their obligations there as well. So it's not say, oh, I'm a leader, whatever. Yes, we like leaders, stuff like that. And the global climate change is a global issue. It's not any one single country, whatever, stuff like that. So in particular, I would like to see the large economies probably around like G20s or whatever that platform. Those countries actually need to really come together, take serious actions, because they account the largest proportion of the energy consumption and the biggest part of the emissions. If they figured out actually the solutions and make serious commitments, we know pretty much so down the road near the future, we have a hope. Right, and it doesn't matter 2 degrees or 1.5, whatever, stuff like that. We, you know, without their commitment, actually, it's just more saying and more talking. And so I'm hoping that in that G20 particular is a good platform for them to really take serious efforts. You could call them leadership. I would call them actually efforts, because it's their obligation, right? And on the positive side, there are some analysts actually, studies already done by different research institute or whatever, going one step deeper. It's not just I take the responsibility, rather say, you know, in real life, countries work together, but also they compete with each other. So every country, even subnational government, is trying to build up their competitive advantages, right? Uniqueness, whatever, stuff like that. So technology becomes very fundamental, very key in order to address the issues of climate change issues. So some analysis already pointing out to some very interesting conclusions, say in order to address the global climate change issues, there may be around 6 countries that are really, really critical in terms of have the capacity, capability in terms of, you know, this industrialization of clean technologies, basically. So for them, it's not just to say, oh, I have the obligation, I need to, you know, address the climate change issues. Rather, it's how you grow your economy. And it's the need is huge because we're talking about the climate change issues, you know, literally this century. And so countries like, you know, US, EU, China, Australia, Japan and Korea, those are the six major countries actually recognized by a lot of analysis studies by the research community, basically saying they are very well positioned in terms of to take on that sort of opportunities, but also, of course, the responsibility there as well. So the argument becomes not to say, gosh, you're obligated to do so, it's your responsibility, rather, actually, it's how you grow your economy differently, because there's market need. In the debate, basically, we're all talking about saying we're moving towards a market economy. What does that mean? Fundamentally, say where the demand, where the need is, then you structure, build up your expertise or capability to capture that needs. That's how you grow your economy. So I think, and you know, the narratives actually at the global level would be more and more shifted towards that sort of direction, very constructively. So together, it's not just they will always compete. There's no doubt about it. If everyone believes in market economy, so competition is the norm. But rather say, okay, this pie is this big. If you take a larger piece, I take a smaller one. So that's a sort of really bad situation. I think in this particular case, actually, it's sort of, okay, how do we figure out to say we work together to create a much, much larger pie or enlarging pie. In that process, I take a larger piece, you also take a larger piece. So it's a more healthy, constructive competition rather than, you know, that sort of narrow-minded situation.
What do you think of the US and the EU commitments so far?
I think, again, this is internationally, we already recognize, say, the you know, nationally voluntary, this more, little bit of bottom-up sort of process probably makes more sense today, you know, in terms of political barrier. So that's why, so like China, EU, US, all the others, they also submitted their INDCs there as well. And I believe their submissions are also based on, you know, economic, technology, political, whatever, all those sort of analysis, and then they came up with this sort of that level. In reality, as I said, probably developed countries could or should take more, right, if they could. But we'll see how the Paris process will work out in the end. I think, the bottom line is for the Paris process is like everyone in it. Rather than like the Kyoto process, you know, everyone was in it, most of us are in it, actually US was not in it, right? And so that's not the way we're going to address the most challenging global issues, actually, in this century. So I'm hoping, say, whatever the commitments on the table today, that should be regarded as the bottom line. And if they could overcome whatever their domestic political barriers or dilemma, so that it would be aim high. The aim higher part, actually, we'll see the negotiation process. Currently, the international, the UNFCCC process does not have any sort of rewarding system or incentives, actually, for countries. If you do more, yeah, that's good. If you do less, no one cares, whatever, right? And so this is sort of a check and a balance, check and review process, whatever. So we'll see how that's going to be agreed, actually, in the Paris process, hoping somehow gradually, if not totally in Paris, actually, somehow in the national process, there is going to be sort of reward for countries in higher sort of mechanism there, so that rather than just to say this is your commitment, if you don't do it, it's bad, right? And if you do more, say yeah, it's okay, it's good, you know, no one cares, whatever, stuff like that. So we'll see how that element will be sort of integrated into international process. I wouldn't really comment on say whether say you said the 40% is enough or the US say 26-28% enough. I think whatever the numbers you put on the table today, you know, they have their own reasons, but I'm definitely hoping that's not say yeah, I just managed to comply with that. Rather, I'm hoping that countries, particularly large countries or large economies, will be able to aim high or to be incentivized actually to aim higher, to achieve higher. And so at the end of the day, we need to solve the problem, right? And rather than say, just do this number, that's it. So,
could you please just tell us a bit about the climate group, how that has perhaps evolved, and in terms of the work globally, but also focused in China as well, what are the current sort of priorities for China and the steps the climate group is taking here in particular?
Sure. The climate group was established 11 years ago. And so we are headquartered in London, and then we have the presence actually in Europe, North America, China, and India. So we jokingly said we are G4. So we are targeting, you know, out of the G20, actually, we are sort of four of them, largest ones there. And most of our work actually are sort of focused on those sort of, you know, players within that sort of geographic sort of landscape there. At the global level, and there are a few things we do, and there's four pillars. One is leadership, and climate leadership means actually particular at the subnational government level and also business level. So those are the two most critical stakeholders for us in terms of how we support to drive changes there. And then we have, so, you know, we want to make sure we work with the partners and to provide, identify the evidence, actually the trends, and really to communicate them very effectively. There is a sort of theory of change, and which is a sort of foundation of this organization, which we believe actually small group of leaders will be able to lead the changes, transformation of the world. And so that's why we focus on a small group of people, mostly at the subnational government level and business level. We work closely with them to support them to lead the changes there as well. So one is leadership. The second one actually is policy. And the policy is mostly focusing on subnational government. And so globally, we have something called the Compact of States and the Regions. So we have a network of states and government and provinces, actually, in particular, those two levels, some of the cities, but mostly states and the provinces. We work very, very closely with them, with decision makers, premiers, governors, whatever, to make sure we support them in terms of making policies to incentivize innovations and scale up of solutions there. The third pillar actually is innovation, and this is mostly focusing on the business community. And so over the years, so for instance, we've been working on LED lighting, and we worked on smart 2020 smart solutions. And now actually there are a few major things happening. One is called Renewable Energy 100, RE100, which is focusing on demand side, large corporate energy users. And the commitment is between now and 2020, we plan to recruit about 100 largest influential brands, working with them to work out the pathway towards 100% renewable. So far, since its launch last September in New York, there are already more than 20 multinational companies in it. The first Chinese company in the global sort of partnership is the Yilin Group. And last Thursday in Beijing, we just launched actually the China Renewable Energy 100 there as well. So the second thing is LED lighting, which is more focusing on the city level street lighting. So there are serious consultations happening now. Basically, energy managers, you know, and or utility managers at the city level who are in charge of LED lighting, trying to go deeper, understand the barriers, and also understand what works and the best cases, whatever, stuff like that. And very soon, before the end of this year, we're going to have something focusing on energy efficiency and also something focused on home living. So there's with the business community, we have a series of specific activities, actually, initiatives with them. And the fourth one actually is finance, climate finance. And with a particular geographic focus in India and China. And so China, actually, we started a few years ago, 2011, 2010, actually, the 12th five-year plan. And we started to focus on the, you know, how to finance the 12th five-year plan targets, which I see as the first green development plan, actually, in China. And then we completed, actually, and national level climate finance policy design. We completed the policy mapping and the case studies for Guangdong, and we completed the design of two financing mechanisms. Actually, one is called Green Silk Road Fund, the other one is ADB supported PPP-based water fund in Chishui River, actually. That's China's the first of its kind. Currently, we are focusing on Shanxi province. It's essentially provincial level energy efficiency financing supported by EU there. So globally, those are the four major pillars today, basically. And so we are working a lot of things around that. Besides that, course, thought leadership is always very important. So policy has been a sort of part of the very important DNA of this organization. So we influence the global process leading up to Paris, so we are very actively engaged. And then, of course, the subnational government level, particularly in China and India at this moment. So, in Beijing, I'm sort of example, so I've been engaged in all kinds of debates and discussions, whatever, like that. So that's the global effort. China, actually, we came to China about more than eight years ago. And so in China, of course, this is a part of the international platform. So we've been evolving, based on, the policy context here. But now today, actually, we have two unique sort of features there. One, we're very globalized in terms of the global priorities that I mentioned, the four pillars. But in the meantime, there's something sort of uniquely sort of China needed there as well. So in China, besides the four, actually, we added the fifth element, which is called the Future Academy, which is human talents there. So on the climate leadership part, actually, this is communication. So thought leadership, whatever. So we do a lot of things. I'm more than a spokesperson for media, than the policy landscape, whatever, and so that's one thing, more the communication focused. With the subnational government, and now we are setting up and also run this platform with the 12, we call new areas designated by the State Council. And so I'm becoming the executive secretary of that platform as the subnational government, actually, there to support them policy innovation. And then we work on those, renewable energy, stuff like that, on the business side in China, so aligned with the international community. And lastly, actually, we, finance, I mentioned already, actually, we're mostly China and India focused, and then work on Future Academy, that's human talents focused. So that's what we do.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.